Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Doorbell rang.
What?
And she opened the door. The shot was fired.
And how do you deduce that?
Fell backward. I was there.
I thought you hadn't been up here before.
I saw the police pull up.
I guess I better try and find that key.
McPherson, tell me, why did they have to photograph her in that horrible condition?
When a dame gets killed, she doesn't worry about how she looks.
Will you stop calling her a dame? Look around. Is this the home of a dame? Look at her.
Not bad.
Jacoby was in love with her when he painted it. But he never captured her vibrance, her warmth. Have you ever been in love?
A doll in Washington Heights once got a fox fur out of me.
Ever know a woman who wasn't a doll or a dame?
Yeah, one. But you kept walking me past furniture windows to look at the parlor suites.
Hello and welcome to Book Versus Movie. This is a podcast where we read books that have been adapted into movies and then we try to decide which we like better, the book or the movie. I am Margot P. of ColoniaBook.com and this is my good fortune co-host, Margot D. of Brooklyn Fitchick.
Hi, everyone.
Please forgive my, I have this, I was just telling Margot before we got on the air, I have, because of all of our rain, we're having what's called a super bloom in California, and there's all kinds of crazy allergy-producing plants.
Irritants.
And so I have allergy voice this week. My apologies. We have a super exciting book and movie to talk about. But if you are brand new, you're just joining us, welcome, welcome. We've been doing this for coming on 10 years, folks. Book Versus Movie is a podcast of which, as the name suggests, is about movies that have been adapted from books. But when the pandemic started, over three years ago now, we committed to doing a brand new episode every single week. And to that end, we had to expand what we meant when we say the word book. And so we really will consider any film that has been adapted from any literary source. Our only rules for this game is that the book and movie, or the source material and the movie, be readily available, easy to access for everybody. The movie's got to be streaming and the book has to be, it doesn't have to be in print, but if you can, you know, sometimes we've gotten them from libraries and stuff like that, but it has to be pretty easy to get. We want you to be able to find these things and follow along with us. Mm-hmm. And today, we haven't mentioned this in a little while, but today is definitely a book and movie where we have to, I think we must warn people, we are going to spoil all of the spoilers.
It's a mystery, so yes.
We will be spoiling everything. I don't think we spoil things in the Facebook group, but if you want to join our Facebook group, you have suggestions for books and movies that you think you'd like to see us do, join us. You can join us there and a couple other places on the internet.
Yes, we do have a basic Facebook page, but we're much more interactive in our Facebook groups. You just type in Book vs. Movie Podcast Group in Facebook and ask to join. Thaddeus, one of our fans, pinned at the top the list of the stuff that we've already done God bless
Thaddeus.
Just
amazing. Yeah. No, wow.
And I think he also put up a list, like a running list of ideas that people have. We should also mention that it needs to be streaming on a major app. So if it's only available on DVD, we can't do it. Because once again, we want it to be open to everybody to be able to kind of play along. We also are on Twitter and Instagram at Book Versus a Movie. You spell that all out there. And please follow us there if you're on those things. And we have an old-timey email. Book Versus Movie Podcast, spell it out, at gmail.com. And if you would like some stickers, send us your address and we will drop the stickers in the mail for you.
If you really enjoy the show, though, like I mean, like really, 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 and you would like to help keep us in books and movies, you can also support us on Patreon.
Yes, Patreon. We have several years worth of shows up there. Recently, we put up Blue Crush, Steel Magnolias, A Room with a View, Top Gun, Of Mice and Men, The Prime of Miss Jean Brody. We are having going up there Enola Holmes, Harold and Maude, His Girl Friday, some really great episodes that are no longer available. We're trying to keep it about 2 years worth of shows that's free to everyone. And it just helps with the cost for the books and the movies. And sometimes we have to buy a paperback or whatever, and also the streaming services. And it helps with the cost for putting the show together, like the software and things like that. So thank you all for doing that. That's Patreon. Look for Book Versus Movie Podcast.
Okay. I'm like so excited that I don't know where to begin with this one. We are going to be talking about Laura. This song has been stuck in my head all week. I don't know about you. Like, and it's not my favorite song to begin with.
No,
it's
I have the Christopher Cross one stuck in my head. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
General Hospital. The Yacht Rock is stuck in my head. I prefer that
it's
one.
It's so funny because R.I.P.
Jacqueline Zeman.
Yes. Bobby was my favorite.
I adored Bobby. And she always seemed like she was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, today we're talking about Laura. Not Luke and Laura.
Nope.
The OG Laura. Laura is a film starring Jean Tierney, and we're going to get into all of the Jean Tierney of it. But before that, like, we have to talk about this author. We have never talked about Vera Gasparri before. What an amazing person. And just, I've never read this book before. Had you ever read it before?
No, this is first for me.
It's super good. But let's talk about her first and then we'll talk about the book.
Yes, Vera Louise Gasparri. She's from Chicago, born November 13th, 1899, and she lived to be 87 years old. She was raised in a Jewish family, and she was supporting her mother from a very young age. She was a writer right from the jump. I mean, she never even really went to college or anything. She was immediately putting her skills to writing, and she's done all the things like writing newsletters and writing for advertising companies, short stories,
everything.
To make a buck. Yes.
So she clearly was like a super gifted writer. I think she was an only child. Her parents hadn't expected to have kids. And so she was super spoiled. And she also was kind of allowed to do things I think that girls generally traditionally weren't doing at that time at the turn of the 20th century. But I mean, yeah, she wrote for magazines. She wrote brochures. Used to be able to do these things called correspondence courses,
yeah,
where you're basically kind of like a learning annex thing, but it was done by mail. And so she was writing these courses, or like a Skillshare kind of thing, like people do now, only she was writing courses about things she had never done and knew nothing about.
Well,
but she was totally selling it.
Yeah, she just could sell. She could just write, you know, like Stephen King or whatever. She just could produce a lot of work. She moves to Greenwich Village in the 20s, and she started writing for, I love this, it was called Dance Lovers Magazine. And she had a relationship with somebody who was at Radio Lovers Magazine. Everybody's like, oh my God, I could have worked at something called Radio Lovers Magazine.
I know.
And live in Greenwich Village and be around all these artists and interesting people. She did that for a while. She actually published a book called The White Girl. And it was about a African-American woman, a black woman, coming up north and passing for white. Now, this is very much, we already talked about a book called Passing. So I don't know if she was influenced by that or not.
But. I don't know. I mean, she's just fascinating. She was a communist, as a lot of people were during the Depression. And that's a whole interesting, I mean, I would love to just read a book about that whole era of her life. But she kind of left the party during the war. Like, she didn't really like the Stalin Hitler kind of relationship that was going on. She was like, she was Jewish, right. And she's like, I'm out. And I don't know. I couldn't quite tell if she was very religious.
I don't think so.
You know, I don't know if she considered herself like a cultural Jew, or I don't know. I'm not quite sure like how she thought of herself in that regard, but certainly just on principle, as you know, she just felt like, I can't go along with the Communist Party playing footsie with Hitler. Like, I'm out. And, but in the meantime, she's writing and writing and she's selling, and she's just a super gifted writer and really good. I think that she did. When you read a work like Laura that has different narrators, let alone like all the different kinds of characters that there are, and she really is very good at telling stories from different people's perspectives and different people's points of view other than her own. Laura was in a magazine, right?
It was Collier's magazine, and it was one of those, it was a weekly edition, and it was like 7 episodes of it. So it's 7 different issues and it would continue the story. That's how I actually bought a version of that on my Kindle. That was fabulous. But she wrote it to try to sell it as a property. Like, she needed the money. And somebody says, what about a mystery? And she's like, meh, those always sound so, she wanted to make it different. So that's why you were saying she has different points of view of characters speaking. She does sell it, but at the same time, she also wanted to make it a play on Broadway, but they couldn't get the money for Broadway. So she basically kind of sold her soul and didn't get as much money as she probably should have. And on top of that, had a deal with Otto Preminger, who was no, you know, easy person to get along with, not exactly...
Everybody always
says
like he was, like super intense. We talked about him when we talked about Carmen.
Right.
Dorothy Dandridge and his relationship with her during the making of that film.
Right. So she had that issue. It does really well. She gets married, by the way, and his name is Isidore Goldsmith. So this is after that. He's from England. He was someplace, I think Poland, and then lived in England. They had a long relationship. She adored him. When he died in 1964, she kept going on. And she was always kind of needing money, so she was always trying to produce. And she worked on lots of screenplays and tons of short stories and really kept herself busy.
But she also, and also too, like... 1942, let me see, when does Laura come out? I've already forgotten. 1941. She writes it during 1941.
Right.
And she, again, she's very involved. I don't know, you know, I think just, it seems to be just kind of on a moral level. She's involved with the Hollywood Anti-Nazi League, the League of American Writers, and she's working to, she gives up her money, but she doesn't have that much money to be throwing around for causes, but she's trying to bring writers who are fleeing Nazism, you know, bring them into the U.S., get them jobs in Hollywood. I mean, she really is a very interesting woman that way. I've only read this one book of hers. I've only heard of her this week. I never heard of her before, I'm sorry to say. I just find her very fascinating. She wanted to join the U.S. Army, you know?
Yeah.
They wouldn't let her.
They wouldn't let her. And she did join the Communist Party, but she did it under an assumed name, and as Margot.
Yeah.
She also traveled through Europe just before the war started, and she went to Russia, and she, like Margot said, she learned what was going on politically there, and she's like, well, I'm not aligned with this. I'm not okay with this. So it's called Gray Listing. She and her husband were both sort of like communists, but that, you know, their names weren't listed, but they knew stuff that was happening, and she hosted parties and she believed in workers' rights and equal pay and things, crazy things like that. But she very, like Margo said, very, very interesting person. It's been a delight. I mean, this book is very easily available. It was out of print for a little while, but it came back a few years ago. There was this, but she wrote her autobiography in 1979, which is available as an ebook now. I would be interested.
Ooh, I would like to read that.
Yeah.
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 It's just fascinating. And so Laura comes out in the magazine, and I imagine it's a big hit because people start workshopping it around for Broadway. It doesn't get any backers, really. Daryl Afzanik wants to produce it as a movie, and he has some very definite ideas over as far as like casting and the way. There's some differences we'll talk about between the book and the movie. Some big ones.
Yeah.
I think the book, you know, they both work on their own. I would just love this book. I thought it was so, so good. And then the movie, of course, is
a classic.
Everybody knows it's a masterpiece. Yeah.
Right.
Book. Is there anything else we want to mention about her? Because we could go on all day.
Right.
She's just amazing.
This story was so popular that it was released by the armed services. So like the soldiers overseas read this story. It came out so we should say 1942 in November and December, or October and November, excuse me, in seven different issues, successive issues. And then it came out as a book the following year. And then it was sold as a screenplay. And this movie comes out a year later. It's kind of a short timeline, but...
Yeah.
But it's this tale, and it's also like you don't hear this from the woman's perspective very often, but this is a woman who's beautiful, lives in New York, she works in advertising, she unapologetically makes a lot of money.
She's very successful.
Hugely and successful.
Very, very savvy and bright. As I mentioned before, the book switches narrators.
Right.
Like halfway through. The first half of the book is narrated by Walter Lidecker, who is a bon vivant, you know, he's like a columnist.
Yeah.
He's just, he's sort of like a Tom Wolfe character, I sort of think of him.
Yeah.
As, I mean, even that's kind of an old reference. I'm trying to think, like, who's
no, he was like, he's a gossip like columnist that. To me. It was like, what's the movie I'm thinking of? Tony Curtis and Burt Lancaster, where he plays the press agent. That's the one I was thinking of. Like, he has a lot of power. He knows everybody in the media, and he puts out a column all the time.
Yeah.
And so she gets to know him, and then he introduces her to everybody around. And then she's writing this advertising copy for these agencies, and she's a woman writing for products that appeal to women. And so, wow, what a big shock. She can do it.
Make it a killing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we know, and we learn at the, you know, it opens, she's already been, it opens it telling us that she has been killed. Waldo is this very, you know, cultured.
Sweet smell of success.
Oh, thank you. Gosh, that was going to give me a headache.
I was going to wake up in the middle of the night screaming that. Okay. But yeah, she's 30, by the way, and unmarried, and has her own nice apartment, has a maid. How great would that be?
Anyway, so, but Waldo, I want to talk about Waldo because Waldo in the book is very different from Waldo in the movie. One of the things that he says, and he very early on in the book, is visited by McPherson, who is our police detective, who's got a kind of a reputation. A good reputation. He's broken some really kind of big deal cases. So Waldo knows who he is. McPherson is there to ask him about Laura. What Waldo says is that he says that he was in love with her and that they were in a relationship. Now, this is what he says. Is this actually true? We don't know. Like, how much of a relationship was it actually? He is suggesting that it was an intimate relationship that they were in for, like, I think he says like 7 years or something like that. That he met her, you know, basically when she was kind of up and coming. He was impressed by her intelligence. They became very good friends, and that turned into this romantic relationship. And there were other men that came and went, because anybody who meets Laura falls in love with her, but nobody really stood in their way at all until this guy Shelby comes along, who was her fiance. But I wanted to mention, I just wanted to mention really quickly, a lot is made in the book about Waldo Lidecker's appearance. First of all, he's much older than Laura. And secondly, he is a large, you know, I think the word obese is used in the book. Mm-hmm. He is an overweight man. He's larger than average man, especially for then. And so much so that he has to walk with a cane. But being the kind of a dandy, that's the word I was searching for. Yes. Being the kind of a dandy that he is, this cane is sort of his like signature, like again, like Tom Wolfe with the bow ties. You know, it's this signature thing that people are like, oh, there he is with his little cane with the gold rings around it. And there's Waldo with his walking stick. And so, yeah, he's this kind of, you know, almost like an Orson Welles kind of a guy.
Yes.
Yeah, he's very invites everybody invites him to the parties. He knows everything about everyone. He's very interested in what the detective, you know, because he tells the detective, like, I loved her so and so. And, you know, I'm going to be keeping an eye on this investigation because I really want to know what happened and who killed Laura. And let's just, you know, just don't mind me. Just act like I'm not even here. But I'm going to be like, I'm going to be there for like everything.
I'm going to shadow you as you go about your business. So this detective shows up at this apartment, and the woman who died, her face was shot off with the high power. Yeah, which is horrible. So he walks in and he's looking around her apartment and he's seeing all of her nice things and he's making all these assumptions about her. And who was her lover and why wasn't she married and how much money did she make? And first we get Waldo, who's like, oh, she's beautiful and smart. And I, you know, no one was good enough for her. And I kept an eye out for her. And then there's Shelby. His intentions are not great.
he's good looking. He's right. Her age. He works at the same advertising agency where she is, although she's higher up than he is. So he says, again, everybody's an unreliable narrator here. Right. So his version of events is, she and I were in a serious relationship. I really wanted to marry her, but I felt like I couldn't because I wasn't making anywhere near as much money as she was. But then things changed. I started to make a better living. And then I felt like it was time for us to get married. So I asked her to marry me and she said yes.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
I love the way that the author kind of just gives you these little clues into the characters, like the thing with the walking stick. And, you know, Shelby is just, he's not very bright.
No.
And he's not cultured. And he's also like, what's the word I'm looking for? He's a very weak character. He's written in a weak way. He himself is not going to like stand up and ask Laura to marry him. He's going to like, no.
Well, she's a gravy train for him. That's part of it. Yeah. And he's used to that. He kind of escorts older women.
Yes.
Is he a gigolo? Is it more of just like, this is the exchange that it is? I bring you youth and beauty. I have a good temperament. You could take me to parties. I'm just not all that bright. I'm probably never going to make a lot of money. Whereas Laura, like, he's making $30 a week and she's making like $200 a week, which is a big sum of money for the time. Enough so she could afford a maid and has this really nice apartment with nice things.
She is doing extremely well.
She is. And she even talks about, and when we finally get to Laura, you know, she's smart and she knows what's going on around her and she understands the motivations of the people around her. And she understands that people, you know, have a thing for her, but she knows some of that is artificial. And she has lovers and she's had relationships and she's pretty modern of a character, especially, you know, you would get, I think that's why a lot of women probably really love this story, because she's just a full fleshed out person. And then she has a maid that loves her to death and doesn't know what happened. But also there was a model that the agency used for advertisement, and she and Laura were the same height and had the same dark hair, same build.
I'm suddenly blanking on her name. Redfern.
Diane Redfern. And she's someone that Shelby has an eye for too, because she's like, they're around the same age and she's also kind of struggling. So then is Shelby seeing her as well? And is Laura catching on to Shelby's like got a thing for Diane? What happens midway? And then we have our detective, who's this hard-boiled, really smart, and is really judgmental and trying to keep keen on everything. He sees this huge portrait of her in her apartment, and he starts falling in love with her because she's so beautiful. And just the way everybody talks about her, he's like, I got to meet this Laura, because apparently everyone loses it when they meet her. Like, they lose themselves, I mean.
I know. And he really is. And I like, too, that he's like, I think I'm falling for
this. Right, and he knows it's
murder
nuts.
Victim. Yes. Yeah. I think that's really, I really like that about this book. So, spoiler alert, she's not dead.
Yeah, he's staying at her apartment and he's kind of watching things. And then Laura shows up and it turns out she was at her country home. Once again, because she makes good money, her phone wasn't working and she didn't read the newspapers. So she shows up at her apartment and some guy is there and she's like, I'm going to call the cops. He's like, actually, I am the cops and you're supposed to be dead. And she said, excuse me? And so he's explaining to her, and she's like, well, I should leave, or I need to call people and tell them I'm not, because they have a funeral for her and everything within a few days. Like,
yeah, this is one of the things that's in the book that's not in the movie. I don't think there's the funeral in the movie, right? Yeah, there's the whole funeral. Yeah, so she turns up. So the first part of the book is, as I said, is narrated by Waldo Leidecker. Second part of the book is narrated by McPherson, the detective. So now he's like, okay, who is the dead woman? Because there's a dead woman.
Right.
There was a dead woman and she was wearing Laura's clothes and had hair like Laura and Laura's shoes in Laura's apartment. So what's that about? It turns out that Shelby, okay, it's going to get very convoluted here.
Right.
This is the thing about these like stories that are serials in the magazines. They sometimes when you put them in book form, it gets a little hard to follow, because it turns out that Shelby, Laura's fiance, and Diane Redfern, mm-hmm. the model who we now know is the murder victim. She's a model that was employed by the advertising agency where Laura and Shelby worked. He and she were having an affair. And because he's just a gigolo, he's just he's a weak person. And I think he was even with her when she's murdered, and we find out later, right? He was actually there in the apartment.
Yeah.
Like with her there in his fiance. It's just like, ew. So now we're wondering, well, maybe Laura's the murderer. Maybe Laura was jealous and she just was like, I'll show you, you know, entertaining this chick in my apartment with my stuff.
Wear my clothes.
Yeah, we'll just see about that. So now we, the reader, are like, ooh, is Laura the murderer? What's going on here? Throughout the whole thing, there are also all of these kind of Laura and Waldo in particular move in these very high class, high cultured, moneyed kind of circles where there's a lot of gossiping going around. Mm-hmm. And so the thing that's so interesting about Laura, the book, and also the movie, is that for most of the work that you're going through, you're reading, you're only getting the idea of Laura and who she is from other people's versions. And other people's versions don't completely gel, particularly with the men who are like, well, she was in love with me. I'm like, oh, no, actually, right. She was in love with me. I'm like, yeah, uh-huh. And that Shelby, you know, Shelby, we have established, is not very bright, so that he would think that he would be able to get away with seeing somebody around behind Laura's back is real dumb.
Especially at her apartment. Also, I mean,
at her own apartment. Oh my gosh. And then there's Laura's aunt, who's really weird. Mm-hmm. She has this aunt who's kind of having a thing with Shelby as well. It's not terribly clear, but there's something going on there. Everybody's a suspect now, is what I'm saying. Laura has come back. She is alive, and things are no more clearer than they were before.
No, and so there's a whole thing where this cop is trying to be gruff with her, you know, like, we're not going to tell anyone, and now I'm going to take you downtown, and I'm going to put you under the lights, and I'm going to, you know, and we get Laura's point of view finally, and she just says, yeah, look, I was smart. I went to an advertising agency. I write this copy. I do this. I've had lovers. I suspect Shelby's not being true to me, so I'm not going to marry that guy, and I'm just okay with my life and what I'm doing. And I don't know why, you know, anyone would murder somebody in my apartment, but I'm going to, you know, make sure that I don't get arrested. But they eventually figure. So let's just go to what the end is, because that's really all that matters.
Right. And the end is, again, very different than in the movie. So although the murderer is the same.
Right.
So spoiler alert.
Right. Waldo the killer.
Is the murderer. Waldo, who's the like little bon vivant guy who's been hanging around the detective, like making snappy remarks and
repartee.
Yeah, he's the murderer. And the murder weapon is a gun that is concealed in his signature walking stick. Dun, dun, dun.
Yes.
What we find out, like, as the book is winding down and the story is winding up, McPherson realizes that Waldo has been dropping these hints with him the whole time. Like, for instance, when McPherson first notices Waldo's cane, sometimes they call it a cane, sometimes they call it a walking stick.
Mm-hmm.
He first notices, it's like, whoa, he grabs it and he's like, whoa, let me look at this thing. And like, oh man, this is unusually heavy. Like, this thing weighs rather more than I thought it would. Huh. And Waldo like snatches it back, like, get your filthy hands off my cane kind of thing. But it's because he's nervous because it's the murder weapon.
Got a gun in there, which I love. I think that's a great idea.
It's such a great thing. Yeah. You know, the end is sort of the same, except that the murder weapon and the way that it's used is totally different. But so it's a similar thing. Waldo thinks that Laura is going to leave him forever, leave his life forever to marry this simp, Shelby. He decides, like, if I can't have you, no one can, kind of thing. And he's, you know, he's not like in the best of health. He's not an action hero. He goes up to, you know, he kind of gets himself up the stairs to Laura's apartment. It's dark. Diane Redfern, the poor victim,
right,
you know, has the same similar hair, similar stature, wearing Laura's clothes, and it's, you know, in the dark. He blows her face off. Thinks until Laura returns, thinks that that's Laura. He believes that he has killed Laura.
Right.
And so now he's back to finish the job because he's back to square one. Like, once everybody kind of, Laura comes back, she decides she's still going to marry Shelby. Like, he's back where he started. So time to finish, you know, take care of this unfinished business. But this time McPherson, I think he like pulls the rug out. He pulls a rug out from under him. He somehow like knocks Shelby over. So when he shoots the gun, it misses the real Laura this time. Somehow he's injured. Does he shoot himself? I don't remember. He gets somehow mortally injured. And this is very interesting because this isn't in the movie at all. But I thought it was very touching. And it's a harken back to the earlier part of the book where we're learning about Laura and his relationship, because they are good friends. Laura sees, you know, Laura puts it all together. There he is on the floor. He's dying. They've called an ambulance. She goes in the ambulance with him. She's holding his hand in the ambulance the whole time. And he's mumbling. He's mumbling about himself in the third person. And McPherson realizes that he's been writing, Waldo has been kind of confessing. He's been writing his confession this whole time, and he goes and finds it in the apartment. But anyway, as Waldo dies, Laura is holding his hand as he dies, and she's genuinely sad. McPherson's like, he tried to kill you twice. And she's like, yeah, I know. But
we were great friends. Know. He introduced her to everybody. Like, she owes her career to him.
She really is sad.
Yeah. Genuinely. And you can feel that way, but, you know.
Yeah. It's just so fascinating to me. These different relationships and how everybody's misreading them, you know, she obviously didn't think that her good friend was going to try to kill her, let alone twice. It's just really interesting. And it's part of, it's like that, well, you never really know anyone well, do you? You know, and it's also nobody, there's never any real, it's everybody has just their version of the truth and what happened or what's going on. Just to have this main character, or this, I guess I'll call her main character, who is intelligent. First of all, she's just a mystery. She's a ghost for half of the thing. But when she shows up, she's bright. She's accomplished. She's all on her own. She's tangled up with a real yucky guy.
Yeah, her picker's not great. But I think she also would be okay on her own. I mean, she's very self-aware.
Clearly. Yeah. but anyway, that's how it ends. It ends with him dying, but it ends with her sad that her friend is dying and holding his hand as he dies.
I should say so I listened to it. There's an audiobook that I got from Libby. And then if you wanted to get the version, which I bought because I was so into it, it's Ring Twice for Laura. And that's like part of the original.
From the magazine, when it was in the magazine.
Right. It had the illustrations and stuff. And that, I always love that stuff. And as an introduction, like, so last week what happened was. And
you have to give the recap. Yeah.
It's really great. And I bet that was so much fun to read at the time. That would have been something I would look forward to.
It's so thrilling. It has so many twists and turns, and not just the changing of the narrator. I mean, how many weeks go by before you realize that Laura isn't actually the murder victim? And then how many weeks go by where you think Laura is the murderer?
Right.
It's just so great. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I think she's just brilliant. I think I want to read everything about her. I want to learn everything about this writer. What a fun author we've had this week. And what a great book.
Well, so
highly recommend.
Absolutely. This is one I could totally, this is going to be tough for me to try to decide when we decide at the end. So she and Otto Preminger, so there was another director that was hired. He filmed for a couple of weeks and apparently it was not turning out great. Otto Preminger was a producer. He wasn't really a director yet, we would know. And so this other director, it's like they said the performances were really broad and not really landing. And so he said, fine, I'll just shoot this myself. So they had to start it all over again. And that's when they changed the gun from being in the cane to the gun hiding in the clock. And there's just certain...
There's a lot of things. Okay, first of all, there's a big deal in the book made about the fact that, you know, Waldo's size. And I forget the name of the actor that his name was. He was a very famous character actor, and he was a larger Laird Krieger. And he was also a well-known kind of character actor. He mostly played villains. Mm-hmm. He died, I think, as a result of like crash diets and surgeries and things that to try to lose weight. To pick Clifton, let's just talk about.
Well, so let me really quickly. I just want to give this story. So she's years after this movie is made. She was very upset with the changes, and we will talk about the film. But she's having dinner at the 21 Club, and she's writing a whole thing about the 21 Club. So she had free meals there, and so she's there one
day.
I would have. Are you kidding me? And Otto Preminger is sitting at the table next to her, and she stands up and starts yelling at him like, thanks a lot, bub. You know, you owe me money. I should have been paid more, and you ruined my story by doing... So they get in a screaming match, and Otto Preminger didn't care who he yelled at. You could be the biggest star in the world.
People know about him.
Yeah, he had a big temper. But in the end, they had to be pulled apart. But she understands, like, this movie. It's the thing she's most known for, but I think it's hilarious. Because she had enough gumption to, like, stand up to him, because he was a big guy and very...
Yeah.
Terrorizing.
He was a bully. Everybody says that, you know, yeah, he didn't care if you were a woman. He didn't care if you were right. He was just gonna
Frank Sinatra and your big star. He didn't care. He did not care. All right, so let's do this. We'll take a quick break and we'll play the trailer and then we'll talk about this amazing movie.
You have rarely met a girl like Laura. Few women have been so beautiful, so exotic, so dangerous to know.
You're Laura Hunt, aren't you?
Yes.
I'm Shelby Carpenter. Want to dance?
I'm not alone.
Oh, you poor girl. I bet he still does the polka.
Yes. Betsy Ross taught it to me.
It was as natural for Laura to be picked out from among thousands of alluring girls as it was for her to be surrounded by luxury, mystery, and scheming men. Every woman will feel that when it comes to men, Laura gets by with murder. Every man will feel that when it comes to murder, it couldn't involve a more enticing girl.
Don't worry. I told you I'd bring in the killer today. Yeah, I was just going to make the arrest when you call. No, I can't tell you now. I'm not alone. You'll see when I come in.
Our director is Otto Preminger. The screenplay is really interesting. Jay Dratler, Samuel Hoffenstein, Elizabeth Reinhardt, and then we have an uncredited Ring Lardner Jr., who would be in the Hollywood 10, and he was good friends with Dalton Trumbo,
yeah,
who was famous for writing in the tub with his typewriter. So this is Ring Lardner's kind of wink and a nod in this movie. For the character that's played by Clifton Webb. Who
Clifton
is Waldo,
Webb, yes.
Who's
okay?
Great.
He's phenomenal. Yes. We can all just agree. But here's the thing. So again, we've talked about Otto Preminger is like not afraid to argue with anybody, including Daryl F. Zanuck. Daryl F. Zanuck, who wants to tweak this movie, and he has very definite ideas of who should play whom or what kind of actor should be cast in each kind of role. He wanted, who's the one he wanted for Laura? Jennifer Jones. I think that's who it was. And he, like I said before, he wanted this character actor, Laird Krieger to play. In fact, I think they even announced that Laird Krieger was going to play Waldo. And George Sanders, I think, was supposed to play McPherson. And Preminger was like, no. How about if instead of getting the guy that, you know, Laird Krieger, who looks exactly as the character is described in the story, we're going to get somebody who looks completely the opposite. We're going to get Clifton Webb, who hasn't been in a film since the silent era. How about that guy?
Who's very slim and slight.
And gay.
And gay as a May morning. I mean, everyone knew pretty out about it. Yeah.
Not a secret.
No.
He was very,
he was like Truman Capote.
It's one reason why. It's why he hadn't made a film in that amount of time. But what a cool angle. Oh. I'm sorry. It's an amazing angle on this movie. It throws a whole new fun slant on it that I really enjoy. But anyway, so Clifton Webb, he had been doing a lot of stage. He'd been in Blythe Spirit. Similarly, Vincent Price at this time was also doing a lot of stage. He was doing the one that Gaslight is based on. So Vincent Price was also making he was kind of a leading man on the stage, and he makes a good Shelby, I think.
Angel Street. That was the
Angel Street. Thank you. So, and Dana Andrews, by the way, who we just talked about in Best Years of Our Lives. This is before that. This is an earlier film. He is spectacular as McPherson. I mean, I just think he's the perfect McPherson.
He's the perfect choice.
And Jean Tierney as Laura. Now, I don't remember if we talked about Jean Tierney. Well, we talked about her when we spoke of
The Ghost of Mrs. Muir,
which, by the way, if you have not read The Ghost of Mrs. Muir, it's such a great book. It's so much fun. And the movie is terrific. Jean Tierney, right before they made this movie, she was married to Oleg Cassini, famous designer. Like if you think of Jackie Kennedy and the pillbox hat and the Jackie Kennedy kind of signature look, that's Oleg Cassini. So Oleg Cassini was married to Jean Tierney, who had also had a relationship with John F. Kennedy when he was still like in the service. But anyway, when they make this film, she's married to Oleg Cassini. When she's pregnant with their first daughter, they have two daughters.
Right.
When
she's pregnant
with the first one, she contracts, rubella
or something.
Something like that. And, you know, this was in the 40s, I think. Sadly, her daughter is born with some very serious brain issues and has to be, in a facility for her whole life, which I think was not a short life, as I recall. And, you know, really heartbreaking thing mm-hmm. for both Ole Cassini and Jean Tierney. This happened right before they filmed this movie. And so Jean Tierney, when she would talk about this movie, it wasn't like her favorite, you know, it was like at a really bad time in her life.
Right.
She felt like she hadn't really given it what she could have given it, because she feels like she sort of is kind of sleepwalking through the process, of course, as you would. Interestingly, that incident was the inspiration for maybe my favorite Agatha Christie book of all time, The Mirror Cracked from Side to Side. I love that book. I love every adaptation that's ever been made of it. There are many good ones. Oh, yeah. There's several really good ones. I think there's one with Joanna Lumley. There's one with Elizabeth Taylor. But anyway, that was the inspiration for that story. But I mean, terribly, terribly sad. And she's so beautiful in this film. And there's something about, I mean, I don't know what she would have done otherwise, but I think what she does here is so perfect.
It is.
I feel like when it's an enigmatic as Laura must be, you know, she's inscrutable and is there and also not there all the time. When we see her in every, and we're seeing her in flashbacks, other people's flashbacks and other people's versions of her too.
Right.
Like in Waldo's remembrances of her, like she's so fond of him and very like having so much fun with him. Like, is she really though? Or is this just how he remembers it? So yeah, I think it's just, she's a beautiful choice for this. And she's so great in it. I'm so sorry that she had such a terrible, you know, thing that she was going through while she was making this. But what about the aunt?
Yeah. So who plays the aunt?
The aunt is another like really famous.
Judith Anderson?
Yes.
She's Anne Treadwell?
Yes. I mean, she's terrific. She's so evil.
Well, we should. I love Vincent Price and.
I do too.
I knew him from underrated. A lot of monster movies when I was a kid, but I mean, to look at his early stuff and what a handsome guy he was and how much presence he has. So I like the very first part we'll talk about is that the detective meets Clifton Webb in the most bizarre way, and I absolutely love it. So he shows up at the house. Clifton Webb is just taking a bath and writing his column. And he just like calmly and coolly says to the guy, "Can you give me a washcloth, please?"
Mr. Lidecker?
Oh, you recognize me. How splendid. Sit down, please.
Nice little place you have here, Mr. Lidecker.
It's lavish, but I call it home. I suppose you're here about the Laura Hunt murder. Yesterday morning, after Laura's body was found, I was questioned by Sergeants McAverty and Schultz. And I stated, on Friday night, Laura had a dinner engagement with me, after which she was ostensibly going out of town. She phoned and canceled our engagement at exactly 7 o'clock. After that,
you ate a lonely dinner, then got into the tub to read. Why did you write it down? Afraid you'd forget it?
I am the most widely misquoted man in America. When my friends do it, I resent it. From Sergeants McAverty and Schultz, I should find it intolerable. Hand me that washcloth, please, Mr.
McPherson.
McPherson. McPherson.
Mark McPherson. The siege of Babylon, Long Island. The gangster with the machine gun killed 3 policemen. I told the story over the air and wrote a column about it. Are you the one with the leg full of lead? The man who walked right in and got him?
Yeah.
Well, well. Hand me my robe, please.
You have a pretty good memory, Mr. Lydecker.
I always liked that detective with the silver shinbone.
Thanks. I hope you won't have any reason to change your mind about it.
Can you hand me my robe? And like this energy he's giving, like.
It's okay. You're in the bath, dude. I mean, okay, I will say this because there's like a very slight, there's one little shot where the camera angle is just right. You can see he's like wearing boxer shorts
right under
the surface of the water, but we're not supposed to think that. We're supposed to think like.
Naked as a blue jay.
He's just letting it all hang out.
Yeah, he's showing his junk. It's like a BDE energy, just like trying to try to throw him off his game. And we get that, like, that's from the top. And so then Dana Andrews is acting alongside him and is keeping up his end. When we get to Vincent Price is playing this very smarmy guy that, like, is trying to wiggle his way around high society, and they have this party, and he shows up, and immediately, as soon as he sees Laura, he wants to dance with Laura, and Laura's like, I'm here with my fella.
One of her usual roundups of bizarre and nondescript characters, corralled from every stratum of society.
This is Mr. and Mrs. Preston. Been waiting all evening to meet you.
How do you do?
Shelby.
Excuse me, honey. You're Laura Hunt.
Yes.
Hello. I'm Shelby Carpenter. Want to dance?
I'm not alone.
Oh, him? I bet he's still doing the poker.
Excuse me, please. Yes. Betsy Ross taught it to me.
Hello, Walter. Darling, how are you?
You've met Shelby.
Hello. Unavoidably. He was awfully nice to me in Louisville at the Derby. His family's from Kentucky.
Sharecroppers, no doubt.
Ah, Frank.
Louise. Louise, for the last time, will you marry me?
I won't, but I saved some chicken livers for you.
Oh, you're an angel. Say, in the meantime, darling, you think you could get this spot out for me? I can afford a blemish on my character, but not on my clothes.
Could need another mouth.
I'm afraid it's rouge.
I'm afraid it's liquor.
Oh, may I have a glass of milk from Mr. Lydecker?
Of course, Miss Hunt.
I forgot to tell you, I also read palms. I cook, I swallow swords, I mend my own socks, and never eat garlic or onions. What more can you want of a man?
Don't listen to that scallywag.
I didn't expect to find him here, Louise.
Well, what do you mean? We're old friends. She feeds me, humors me, repairs me, and refuses to marry me, don't you, honey?
I do.
She has good sense.
And wait just a minute. Thanks, Louise.
You're wasting your time. She's got good sense, too.
You're jealous.
And what does it feel like, Mr. Carpenter?
What does what feel like, Miss Hunt?
Right after that, I guess he has a bad stomach or something. He's always getting kind of sick, so she's got to get some milk for him.
And he's very delicate.
He's a delicate creature. Yeah, we do get, like, kind of different vibes from him, and I don't know if that's Clifton Webb just kind of coding, maybe. It's hard to say.
Because here's the thing. I saw something somewhere, rather, that, you know, Zanuck objected to Clifton Webb's casting by Preminger for a number of reasons. But as we said before, not the least of which was that the fact that he was gay. And famously, the story is that Preminger says then to Zanuck, like, well, that's kind of the point. I think you're missing, you know, if you don't realize that, you're kind of missing the whole thing of the story here. Was he directed to kind of lean into that? I don't know, but it's really super good.
It's great because it's a mystery.
And I am here for it.
Yeah, it's a mystery. And this is code era now, Hollywood. So they can't do all the things. We talked about The Thin Man last week. That was pre-code. This week we're talking about this movie. They have to kind of keep things on the level, but I think there's a wink and a nod in a lot of different places for him to kind of do his thing. But he's like, he shows up with him as he's doing all these interviews of people, and it's never really, like, nobody ever says you shouldn't be here, but eventually he's taking care of the house, and just like in the book, in the movie, Laura shows up. And I found a colorized version of this movie.
I did too. It was weird.
It's weird. I mean, once again, she's so beautiful. Apparently, Jean Tierney, her first Broadway stint, she was like a chorus girl that carried like a water jug. And the person giving a review said, starring this person and this person, and Miss Jean Tierney, the most beautiful water carrier I've ever seen. Like, she was stunning. And she's
beautiful in every frame of this movie.
She's radiant. I mean, but she's also got a little mystery to her, too. Like, does she really know what's going on with these guys? I mean, what's the deal with her and Waldo? Did they ever really have a relationship, or are they just really, really good friends? I mean,
when you see him describe it again, Like, it's we're seeing his version of it. And in his flashbacks of their relationship, like, she's just, oh, and can I get you anything else? And, oh, anything you want to do, Waldo? And da, 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 da. And she's just, you know, you could interpret that as her being in love with him, I guess, maybe. But when she actually turns up and you see her interacting with him, you see instead, like, a real... She does really care for this person. Yeah. She definitely has a lot of respect for him. She thinks he's silly in a lot of ways, but she also, like, has, just like in the book, she has this deep respect and as a friend for him. But is it in love with him? Well, we don't really think so. I don't think she's not giving me that.
No, she looks great with Vincent Price, by the way. They
do look really. Yeah.
They all look good. I mean, we were just talking off the air about a movie called Leave Her to Heaven that we're going to do one day because we both love that movie. And all three of them in there, Dana Andrews, Vincent Price, mm-hmm. Gene Tierney. We see that in Color. But they just have this wicked kind of fun chemistry. I do. And also, I love it when he takes her downtown and he puts the spotlights on her. And the whole thing is meant to, like, throw her off. But she's so beautiful. Like, her face.
She's so pretty.
Oh, my God.
All right. Let's have it. Look at me.
What are you trying to do? Force a confession out of me?
You've been holding out, and I want to know why. It'll be easier for you if you tell the truth.
What difference does it make what I say? You've made up your mind I'm guilty.
Are you?
Don't tell me you have any doubts, since you... Oh, can't, please. Do I have to have those lights in my face? Thanks. No, I didn't kill Diane Redfern. Or anyone else.
Then why? Why did you tell me the radio at your country place was broken?
Because it was broken.
Not when I tried it.
Just as I was leaving the village, I asked the local handyman to fix it.
How did he get in?
I always leave a key under the flower pot on the porch.
You're too intelligent to make up something I could check so easily. But you're intelligent enough to have broken it yourself to strengthen your story. The main thing I want to know is why you pulled that switch on me about Carpenter. You told me last night you decided not to marry him.
Yes, I guess I did.
But today it was on again. Why?
Well, I changed my mind.
What are you trying to hide? Don't you realize you're involved in the murder? You've got yourself in a jam it's not going to be easy to get out of. Unless you're on the level with me. This is no time for secrets. Now, did you really decide to call it off? Or did you just tell me that? Because you knew I wanted to hear it. What went on between you and Carpenter when you saw him last night? Did he persuade you to make up? Or did you agree to pretend you had? Was that it?
Well, we... That is, both of us thought...
He convinced you that if you broke the engagement now, people would think you believed he was guilty.
Yes. But now I know it was only because he thought I was.
Did you believe he was guilty?
No, I'm sure he isn't. But he'd gotten himself into an awfully suspicious position. And he's the sort of man that people are always ready to believe the worst about.
Are you in love with him?
I don't see how I ever could have been.
Like, oh, is this a photo shoot now?
Right.
Like,
what are you doing for Vogue? What is going on here? Where's Richard Avedon? This is amazing. She's just, but it turns out, yeah, that they killed this other girl, this model. She's the one that was murdered. But this time, and I agree with, I miss the cane. I really like the fact that it's this.
I don't. Why couldn't we still have it?
The movie, like he walks with it. He swings it around. He kind of plays with it. Maybe that's part of the coding he's doing too. I don't know.
I don't know. I wonder. I don't know. I don't know why that was the choice to. And it's not like
it's not great.
I don't know. It's just so cool in the book. Like it's right. So cool that is the murder weapon, and it's not the way that you think it is. In the movie, instead, you know, we establish, as we do in the book, that he is, you know, he is a man of fine tastes. Mm-hmm. And And he says repeatedly, you know, when that after, you know, since Laura's gone, you know, some of the stuff that's in her apartment is mine, actually. And I kind of would like it back. I would like this thing and that thing. And I especially would like that antique clock. I'd really like to have that back, please, if you don't mind. Then, so the way that McPherson puts it together is he realizes that Waldo has the same clock, you know, the clock that he says he wants from Laura's. He has an identical one in his house. Mm-hmm. And so he starts kind of looking at the clock and finds the empty chamber. And he realizes like, oh, yeah, you could fully hide a gun in here. But there's not one in the one in Waldo's house. So he fears, oh, well, it must be in the one in Laura's house. And that's what it turns out. But I do miss it being the. Why, I don't get why it couldn't just be the same. Why not?
There's not a good answer as far as I'm concerned. I think, I don't know if Otto Preminger wanted it. That's the answer because Otto wanted it. That's always going to be the answer. It's all in Otto's head.
It's fine.
I didn't know about it.
It's just not
until
as
now.
Fun as in the book. Yeah. When I read it, like, right? When you read it in the book, you're like, well, that's way cooler.
That's clever. It's a very Agatha Christie kind of turn to it.
Like, yes.
Which
it
I
is.
Love, which that's another thing I really love.
Mm-hmm.
It's like something, right.
Yeah. It's, and then also the end, you know, he's shot by the police, right?
Mm-hmm.
The police shooting.
McPherson, I think, shoots.
Yeah. Which again is different. It's a different thing than him. Yeah. Anyway,
well, McPherson's sergeant. Sorry, he shot down.
The other police officer, the backup guy, and you know, in the famous line, he says, "Goodbye, Laura. Goodbye, my love." And but she doesn't. We don't get that. Like in the book, we don't get her reaction to that. His saying that he says it off screen, and she is also off screen, I think. So we don't see how she feels about his dying. Does she feel like she feels in the book where she's sad about losing her friend? She's relieved that she has not been killed herself.
but, not going to marry Shelby now for sure.
we don't get any of that.
No.
Oddly, it's strange. But it's like, it's an amazing movie. The lighting alone. It's so brilliant in this movie. All the performances are so good. The dialogue is awesome. The music, you know, that song is like so in your head by the mm-hmm. end. I love all the characters. I love the scene with the aunt and Laura, and they're in the powder room, and the aunt's telling her, like, Shelby's actually really better for me. Like, I know you think you want to marry him, but actually, niece of mine, I think he should really go with me. And the whole time, she's just, like, touching up her makeup, and she's, like, saying this really evil stuff to her niece.
Letting her know that she knows Shelby in the biblical sense. Yeah, she's like, yes, yeah. Yeah. It's great. It's really fun. It's a quick movie. It's, like, an hour and a half. I mean, it just is so much.
Ooh, and I love the woman who plays Laura's maid. That's not really in the book that way. Like the way the
Bessie.
And I love her. I just love her.
Everyone loves Laura.
Yeah. Everyone loves Laura.
I get it. I totally get it. This was, I love this one. This was super fun. It was nominated for several Academy Awards. It won for Best Black and White Cinematography, which you could totally see why. And I think the music, I mean, definitely it's a classic for a reason. It's one of the top AFI movies for thrillers, mystery films. And yeah, I love it.
So book versus movie.
I know. I'm going to pick movie, but it's a tie. I'm going to say a tie. I know I'm going to be a wimp. I'm going to say a tie.
I am also going to say a tie. I was not expecting to enjoy this book as much as I did. It really grabs you right at the beginning. I just love the way, especially like when she's changing the narrators, that these two men in particular, the McPherson and because you have Leidecker and then you have McPherson, and that's the order that they are in the book in terms of narrators. They have such completely different points of view of the world and humanity. And she's writing from inside the mind of each one in such a brilliant way.
I forgot to mention, I super love this in the book, and I love this in the movie, where McPherson's like, oh, dames don't care if you call them a dame when they're and dolls. Dolls and dames, that's like how we... And he's like, don't you call her a dame. She was not a dame. It's so great.
It's so great.
Yeah. I love
just
it.
I love it.
I love it too.
So we have something really exciting planned for our next episode. Because here's the thing, and for those of you who aren't in the U.S., in the U.S. we have these like months where right. we like celebrate. We have Pride Month next month, and we have we had African American History Month in February. Hispanic History Month is, for some reason, it's like between half of September and half of November. May is Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. It's also, I think it's also Jewish American History Month.
I don't know.
Let me double check that.
Yeah. So
I could be wrong.
It's AAPI Month. So we decided to do something kind of really cool, I think. We're going to be talking about Bruce Lee. So we're talking the Bruce Lee movie. It's The Dragon, the Bruce Lee story. And we're going to pair it with Shannon Lee's book called Be Water, My Friend, which is the teachings of Bruce Lee.
So I can't wait.
It's going to be.
It is. May is also Jewish History Month. So maybe,
seriously.
Yes, it is. It's the Jewish American Heritage Month. Yeah.
Well, Otto Preminger and Vera Kasperi, both Jewish.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I am very excited to talk about Bruce Lee. We've never talked about Bruce Lee.
No.
I think was last year the first year that we did AAPI?
I think last year we did the whole month. So we had like the Red Lantern and Mulan, the Joy Luck Club.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so this month we're covering, because I just was like, who's like the biggest like AAPI superstar? Like, you have to say Bruce Lee. He was born in San Francisco, raised in Hong Kong, came back to America. And a time when we talked about Mickey Rooney's performance in Breakfast at Tiffany's, where
I know
how Asian people were represented. And then he completely changed the game. It's going to be so exciting. So I cannot wait. It's going to be
very exciting.
Please follow us at all the places that I mentioned at the top of the show. Please send us your suggestions. We've done songs, magazine articles, poems, you know, whatever you think would work for us. And Margo, let's say our email once again, bookversusmoviepodcast@gmail.com. Margo, where can they find you?
You can find me online at coloniabook.com, and all of my social media callouts are at She's Nacho Mama. And where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Brooklyn Margo. I'm on Instagram, Brooklyn Fit Chick. My site is Brooklyn Fit Chick. And I'm on TikTok, where I post some videos about the movies we're covering, at Margo Donahue. Thank you all very much for showing up with us today. This was super fun, and we'll be back soon with Bruce Lee. Thank you so much for listening to the Book vs. Movie podcast. We are a part of the Frolic Podcast Network. You can find more podcasts you will love at frolic.media/podcasts. We follow the hashtags LadyPodSquad and PodernFamily. If you want to support the show, you can go to our Patreon page, go to PATREON, and look for Book vs. Movie Podcast. We have a base.